Yes, hello and good morning from my side too. My name is Greg. I work at the Center of Salutogenesis together with Georg already since 20 years. I do a lot of intervention research, evaluation research, always with a focus on job resources, work engagement. And in the recent years, we've been digitalizing our approaches, sort of thinking about how to transfer our workshops, our surveys, into a digital format. So that's what I've been doing for the last years. Yeah.
Okay, I think that also makes clear that a lot of the things you will hear now, we really co-developed. And also, I must say, what was really helpful for really developing ideas for advancing this concept of salutogenesis was that we always have been focusing on the working context, the specific everyday life experience of people, which is certainly very important to people's life. And by applying salutogenesis to a specific context, I think we could really draw conclusions for how to improve or advance this salutogenic model in a more general way. With that, I would now still like to share my screen to make some points, certainly now more visibly clear for our workshop now. I have, So you hopefully see the full screen now.
I think you first have to share, start the screen, share the presentation mode, and then share the screen.
Really?
Otherwise,
I always do it the other way around. It's really strange, you know. But
that's because. I switched the settings to window mode and not full screen mode. So that's the trick about it.
I'm really sorry. I mean, I did that so many times in teaching, and certainly when it's most important, and it doesn't work. But I will be there in a second. Okay. Does it work now?
Yes, beautiful. Okay.
Very good. Thanks a lot. Sorry again. So, what do we want to do today? I will just. It's incredible. You know, it cannot even find these errors where how to advance it now. Okay, I will give a short introduction and why we even need this idea of advancing the salutogenic model. Then I will introduce how this model would look like. And Greg, he will focus on this specific concept of thriving, which is part of our workshop. And then we certainly want to come into a discussion with you. So why such a completed theory of salutogenesis? I think there are two main arguments. On the one hand, there is really a gap between the original salutogenic model and what we do as health promotion, both practitioners and researchers. We very much focus the so-called salutogenic orientation, which means we focus on resources and positive health outcomes. And this is really very well reflected in the Handbook of Salutogenesis, where you find a lot of chapters which really make this claim that they really focus on this positive side, both on resources and on thriving as a desired outcome. This is also certainly reflected in the WHO Ottawa Charter, which really defines health again in a positive way as a positive concept emphasizing social and personal resources. Now let's move on to the second gap. There's a gap also, I think, between the original model and our everyday life experiences. You also know that we want to create health or actually as a WHO Ottawa Charter says, health is created and lived by people within the settings of their everyday life, where they learn, work, play, and love. So somehow we need to link our endeavors towards these everyday life experiences. Now the big question is, how do we experience life? As you know, Antonovsky has proposed this idea or this image metaphor of this dangerous river of life where we need to survive. Well, we actually asked in a recent survey, which was even run in December 2020 in the second wave of the COVID-19 crisis, amongst the representative samples of employees in German-speaking countries. And we asked them, how do you perceive your life more on the left-hand side, like my life is like swimming in a river full of danger, I fight for survival? Or do you perceive it more on the right-hand side, my life is like swimming in a river full of enrichment, I thrive in it? Now, the responses might surprise you or not, but only actually 2% said, well, I only perceive it like being in this dangerous river of life. 15% are more towards the left-hand side of the 7-point Likert scale, but 85% perceive it equally as dangerous and thriving, and even a majority is really clearly on the right-hand side. So if we only follow this image of life as being in this dangerous river of life, we basically miss 98% even of people who also partly perceive this positive side of life besides this need for struggle, for survival. So I think that's a very powerful argument why we really should expand the salutogenic model. Now you could say, well, but it's already in the model. I would like to say that's only partly true. That's a simplified version, as you know, of the salutogenic model, which has been previously published by others, but really, I think, condenses the basic idea of salutogenesis. As you know, this original salutogenic model really starts with this first trigger of potential endogenic and exogenic stressors, which are really grim and dark, like accidents, horrors of history, interpsychic conflicts, and so on. You see it all on the left-hand side. And in order to survive that, I need to have personally a very strong sense of coherence, which then helps me to reassess the stressors and to mobilize the necessary general resistance resources to survive this very bad situation. So that's on the one hand, why really the starting point of the salutogenic model is mostly this more darker stimuli, which then I need to resist. I mean, that's really in the world of resistance resources. By definition, there's something negative I want to resist. I would never like to resist something positive, okay? Now let's move to the outcome, health, the disease ease, health continuum. Also, we always think, well, ease, that's really something positive. Well, it is something positive, but still very negatively defined. It's really defined as the absence of pain. It's actually original wording by Antonovsky, not by myself, but he defined it as absence of pain, as absence of functional limitations, and absence of need for treatment. So all really quite negatively defined. So what my argument is that we need to really expand the salutogenic question posed by Antonovsky, who really asked, what is the origin of health, being more on this ease continuum on the ease side in very stressful environments, which is really very much about the fitness of the swimmer, how much shock does he have or she has to survive his dangerous river of life. So it's also a very individualized focus in this original concept. And I think we need to add this additional perspective. What is really the origin of positive health in resourceful environments, so we can really have joyful and purposeful swimming to thrive in a resourceful river of life? Any questions up to now or objections? I mean, we'll discuss later. Then what can we do? I think it's actually quite easy. This is just another way of showing the original salutogenic model, where we do have these stressors, which we rather like to name demands in a more broader sense, demanding situations, which can lead to negative health outcomes to end up somewhere on this ease disease continuum. And on the positive side, we do have resources which help us to resist original resistance resources to cope, overcome these negative aspects of life and make it more likely that we move to this ease continuum and see a certainly SOC plays an important mediating role. So now what can we do? We just simply need to add that there also is a direct relationship between resources. When I encounter a resourceful environment, like working in a great team as I have the luck in my working environment, then this really activates me every morning. I would love to work with these people. I feel highly engaged, and that would be an immediate positive path towards health. And certainly this also can be positively influenced by a strong sense of coherence. So if I have a strong sense of coherence, I certainly also am more likely to find with also positive resources, which we would call thriving resources, which allow me to have this very positive health experiences. And only if we consider both of that paths, those parallel paths, simultaneously, we can explain and predict and make more likely that people have sustainable, happy life. Okay. So any questions for now for this model, the expansion of the model? I will show two applications in a minute, but I thought it's better to ask some questions now.
Let me jump in. I have one question, Georg, for you. Because you said that in the first one, the focus was very much on the individual and the fitness of the swimmer. So do you think also by adding this other dimension, you're focusing more on the environment and making it itself more resourceful and easier for people to swim in?
Yeah, I think, certainly. I don't want to be too negative about the original model and its application. Also, certainly, you can focus on increasing the general resistance resources, and by that, making it more likely that people can survive this river. So it's not only about this individual fitness in the sense of coherence. It's also about this resistance resources that can boost, where we have both specific and generalized resistance resources. But I think, yes, from my point of view, to be a little bit provocative, we can also explain health without even ever looking into sense of coherence, because there are also direct paths, because not all goes through your conscious orientation to life. It's like a conscious lens you put on the sense of coherence, but certainly a very demanding, stressful situation can immediately trigger your stress response without ever getting detailed, reassessed and processed by yourself in a conscious way. And the same for positive things. If I enjoy life, swimming, whatever I love to do, that's just a joyful experiences without, activating my sense of coherence, okay? Or a lot of things I think really are happening unconsciously. Any other questions? Comments for now? Yeah, Stefan?
Yes, I hope that you might see me now.
Yes.
Perhaps it's a kind of naive question because I'm quite a newcomer to the salutogenic concept, and I love the handbook. So congrats to this. That's a really good public relation for salutogenesis concept. But as I understood it correctly, for me as an individual, both axes should be important, the pathogenesis as well as the salutogenesis, right?
Yes.
So it's not an entweder oder, either or, but it's both. It's important. But in the concept, on which point is the connex between the pathogenesis and the salutogenesis? That's something which is quite nebulous for me. And how do you relate or connect those axes? That's perhaps too naive. It's perhaps quite easy. Or I have a classical medical background, and I got used to work with the pathogenesis and the therapeutic attempts. And so that's an open question. Perhaps you hear it very often from medical doctors.
What I didn't emphasize too much now in this brief introduction of this model is exactly this kind of interrelationship between the two paths. So we would say there are like two main paths, the one going from demands to negative health outcomes, which would be the traditional pathogenic perspective, and then this new path of resources leading directly to positive health outcomes, which would be this new positive perspective, purely, I would say, salutogenic perspective. And then we have this cross-cutting path. So certainly, if you have strong resources, this also helps you to overcome, for example, disease and to deal better with your disease as an important resource. So it makes it less likely that you have these negative outcomes of your disease. On the other hand, when you are very, very strongly diseased, then also that certainly impedes to a certain extent your positive health. But you probably or might know this research of Corey Keyes, and he is distinguishing also between negative mental, social, social, emotional health, mental health, and positive mental health in sense of flourishing. And here we can show that only there is a 23% shared variance between these two concepts, really. So yeah, I think with our two distinct paths, still there's some overlap, but not too much overlap. Okay. That might help me now to just move to the next slide, where we can also show this argument empirically. We had here a very big study with very diverse employees across the different jobs and organizations. And here you can see that when people experience very strong job demands, they really have a medium-sized relationship towards negative health outcomes you see listed on the right-hand side. On the other hand, if you have a strong resources available in your job, particularly with good social environment, but also interesting tasks and control of your tasks, then that's buffering this negative number here, with negative health effects. And even more powerfully, you find this really strong relationship between these strong, job resources and indicators of thriving in the job, that you feel satisfied, enthusiastic in your job, and so on. And again, some impediments. So if you have also high job demands, it's impeding to a certain extent that you can thrive. Okay, so that's exactly what we discussed now, Stefan illustrated with some data from the working context. And last not least, let me show this last example. Multiple sclerosis certainly would be such a long-term chronic disease. And I must say, in our institute, we also are in charge of the MS registry for Switzerland. And they have been running studies on these people with this disorder for many years. And when we came in, say, well, you normally only study how different functionalities of people become worse over time. That's a very one-sided picture of this disease. And I don't want to, diminish at all the big suffering which goes along with this disease. That's an absolute reality. And actually, I even saw that Anja is here. She did this study. So Anja Lehmann, she might say more later. But we focused on this multiple sclerosis patients and wanted to find out what can still keep them in the job. And so we found that living in this resourceful environment, both private and particular work-related environment, makes it more likely that they stay in the job. And also, independently, beyond the level of the severity of their disease, they are more likely to stay in the job if they have strong resources, and they also are more likely to be engaged in their job. So I think really showing that even people who are in a very miserable life situation because they do have this, this severe disease, not only focusing on the negative impact of that, but also what helps you to still survive, but also even thrive still with this disease, is, I think, important. And that's also, for example, reflected in scales like the benefit sign scales, which assesses that people with such a chronic disorder are looking much more deeply what's really important to them in their life. They want to redefine the purpose of their life. They re-evaluate and strengthen their social relationships and so on. So there's a lot of positive health development going on, even in this severe situation of having this disease. And I can tell you there are actually people with MS on the board of this register, and they were so happy that finally someone is not only looking on the bad side, how everything gets worse, but also on the positive side of their life, because they felt much more valued as a complete human being. And that's exactly the idea of this advancement of the cytogenetic model. Okay, so I spoke a lot, and it will be time for Greg to continue.
Yes, I just answered something in the chat. Shall I share my screen? That might be easier to sort of switch through slides. And I would like to go a bit into Multitasking. I'm a man. I'm a traditional man. I can't do everything at the same time. So yes, sorry about that. Georg has been talking about thriving. What do we mean with thriving? There are more concepts like flourishing also. Thriving is a very broad term with a range of rather unspecific definitions, what we actually mean with it. And I would like to sort of give you some background, what we think how we should think about thriving. Two definitions, a more recent one calls thriving the experience of development and success in life, which would mean both a process and an outcome, sort of growing, developing, and experiencing as a consequence success in life. Or a more older one by Gretchen, developed in the context of work, the experience of vitality and learning here also, sort of the learning part, the process part. And oops, there's somebody hijacking the microphone. Okay, leading to a sort of a feeling of vitality. And we, in the context of health and the WHO health definition, would say, okay, in the broadest sense, thriving would be something like an active and positive engagement with the world, just like Georg also described it, which leads to something that is more than the absence of just disorders, what Georg also stressed is. So, and that brings me to the next point. What is this more than the absence of diseases has been haunting us for decades? What do people actually mean with the more? And interestingly, the WHO provides us with a very nice definition of at least mental health, what they mean with more than the absence of diseases, which is very close to the definitions of thriving. Because they say mental health is a state of well-being in which the individual realizes his own potential, so he develops, he can cope, that's more sort of the negative side, or master the normal stresses of life. He or she can work productively and fruitfully, so not only just sort of dealing with what has to be done, but being productive, successful, and fruitful. And of course, always the social part of mental health contribute to the community. And this is what we know from sort of the public health and health promotion sector in psychology. There is a large range of positive definitions of life and of well-being, such as concepts of like positive health by Martin Seligman, who developed the PERMA concept, or by Carol Riff, where Corey Keyes also worked with, who Georg mentioned, who she developed the concept of psychological well-being. And there are all these theories of basic human needs, such as the self-determination theory by Deese and Ryan. And these scholars, they show us all these words in their definitions. They say humans want to be autonomous and grow. Sort of this development and learning. They want to master what they do. Humans want to be competent and accomplish something while they are doing their work or they're living their lives. Humans, while doing this, they want this feeling of engagement, this flow feeling, which is accompanied by positive emotions. And obviously also want to have this relatedness to community and be affiliated to ideally a loving and caring and supporting group, all of which leads to not only purpose and meaning in life, but also to some kind of self-acceptance. These are concepts or words we get out of these more psychological theories on positive health and well-being. And brings me to the next slide. What is actually underlying all this? What are human beings? What is human doing and living? And obviously, this relates to the two-path model Georg presented before. Humans, in the first line, they have to survive, which is sort of survive is a very negative term, but they have to reproduce themselves as living organisms, meaning these are the motivational systems of affiliation, of security, of securing your livelihood, of avoiding dangers and threats if they can't be avoided, trying to cope with them, which will go hand in hand with experience of stress, but basically try to prevent disorders, prevent illness, and ultimately, not on the long run, but on the short run, try to avoid death. So this is sort of our reproduction, our surviving part, and the thriving part is sort of the other axis we have in our life. Humans explore life. Humans explore their surroundings. These are the motivational systems of autonomy, of searching for sensation. It's a system of approaching the world and life, sort of searching for challenges, searching and trying to craft a resourceful environment, which will go hand in hand with an experience of energy. And this will be sort of our motivation to promote our well-being in a sense, like I presented it before. So this is the double face of our life. And maybe you know the pyramid of needs by Maslow, which sort of says first you have to survive and build your security, and then you can try to thrive. That's a misunderstanding of Maslow. He never said that way. It's both at the same time. Of course, when you're sort of nearly dying, you don't have to think about thriving, but when your most basic needs are covered, then humans usually start to explore their lives. And I will show why that's important too. I also stressed the notion of the emotions, the feelings that go with these two motivational systems. And we work with the concept of positive and negative activation, which is very popular in psychology as well. So on the one hand, you got this stress system when you encounter threats or some kind of demands which could be threatening. This will sort of kick in your stress system, where you will feel stressed and nervous. And in absence of stressors, you will feel relaxed and calm, which is actually the ease part of life. On the other hand, the thriving, the exploration system, which is more associated with this axis of positive activation, meaning you engage in something, you develop, you grow, you will feel enthusiastic and full of energy. And the counterpart of this, when you don't experience this, you don't will be just at ease, but you will feel bored and without energy. So this is a very nice concept we work with. And we developed also these emojis for, say, smartphone sensing methods when we want to collect data in everyday life. People can sort of click on the emojis, how they feel right at the moment. So to cover both this stress axis, the negative activation, but also the positive activation part. And why do I stress this with the positive activation? Not only because it's just something we have to sort of take into account because it's vital for human being. It's also vital for building resources. And as we know from the salutogenic theory and also from what Georg showed, resources are not only here for thriving, they're also here to sort of help us cope with stressors and threats in life. So this is a very nice theory called the Broaden and Build Theory by Barbara Fredrickson. She says positive emotions are vital for us to sort of broaden our perspective to life. And when you experience this positive energy, these positive emotions, you will develop new thoughts. Just like in the introduction session today, they said, open your mind. To open your mind, you have to have sort of some good feelings going on in you. So positive emotions will help you sort of think new things, think out of the box, try new activities, explore the world, build new relationships, approach new people, check out your world, which will sort of help you build enduring resources from the social kind. You have new social networks, more support. You will acquire new knowledge, new skills through learning, through exploring the world, which will ultimately lead to this feeling of fulfillment, this feeling of thriving, but also will help you to master the world and survive your surroundings. And the positive thing about this is that it's a gain cycle. Once you are in this state, you will experience more positive emotions, which again will sort of help you broaden and build your resources in life. This is a very interesting concept. Barbara Fredrickson is one of the leading researchers in the whole positive psychology area. And she could show this gain cycle in many studies. So there's ample evidence that this is actually something which is important and it really is here in humans. So to sum up and then give you the opportunity to also to ask some questions. When we look at thriving and positive health from this perspective, we'd say it's a very energetic process of exploring, of learning, of building resources in life, which leads to a feeling of thriving, which we could sort of equal with the concept of positive health, which is essentially a gain cycle. Building leads to more building, leads to more resources. And this might be also an answer to Stefan. It is also needed to build the resources for coping and securing your own livelihood and your own reproduction. So, questions. Yes, Stefan.
Yeah, thanks. So you clarified a lot, both Georg and Gregor, you as well. I have one question regarding the coping. You have introduced this in a sidestep, kind of negative. Perhaps it was just a feeling. Mm. But to be open, I see a more positive color on this coping, because I remember an editorial in 2009 in Lancet, and the headline was, "What is health? The ability to adapt." And this is really the positive aspect of coping. And I know that a big part of the community, many groups are dealing with the adaptability of the human as a system on any level of this network. And so that's just a comment that coping, to my opinion, to my personal opinion, is not just kind of pathogenetic aspect to be protected and to prevent a stressful disaster, but it's more an salutogenetic aspect in the sense of adaptability of a system. And successful adaptability, by the way, might be a good description on my paper, which might also influence the thriving. Perhaps it's successful adaptation, which is also part of this thriving moment. Yeah. That's not more than a comment of a point of discussion.
I fully agree. I mean, maybe I throw in two terms. One is coping and one is crafting. In our area, we talk about coping as the overcoming the adversarial or the threatening parts of life. And crafting is more sort of the building of the resources, the active building of resources. But there is also a big discussion, how is mastery or say adaptation related to both the pathogenic and the salutogenic path? Many people say mastery, as Antonovsky also says, successful mastery strengthens your health and your well-being and your resources, right? Because you develop new skills in mastering something difficult in your life. So when you look at the definitions of thriving, there's all these sort of this picking around the words, like saying, Is mastery, no, mastery is not thriving. Mastery is just, that's coping. And others say, no. Mastery is very important for your feeling of success in life. And so I wouldn't say these two paths are sort of separate. They are very closely intertwined. And I think then it comes to sort of the details of defining exactly what we mean with thriving, and then being very clear that mastering difficult situations can lead to thriving, most definitely. But it's not sort of the core element of thriving. It is, say, a side effect of thriving, maybe. Thriving in itself is sort of more the active part of exploring the world. But when you explore the world, you will encounter suddenly some challenges which will turn into threats. And then you have to cope with them and master them. And that again will lead to this feeling of success and vitality and competence. So that will be my answer. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Greg. Elio is raising her hand for a while.
Okay, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Thank you very much for your presentation. I think my question is more so maybe a challenge that I experienced with positive psychology. It's very nice if people have positive emotions, of course, but I work with very highly traumatized individuals. They don't have many times positive emotion. You can't just make people feel positive emotions. Emotion is a biological phenomenon. I'm not clear how do you actually work with people, because for me, the people that arrive to me, you know, they come with depression, with anger, with frustration, with upset, with fears, with terror. They don't come with those positive emotions, that I can't see how in this particular model I can really relate.
Okay, I don't know.
Street level that I work with.
Yeah, I would like to give the word to Hildur, who yesterday showed this wonderful study with traumatized women, and I think she can address this question very well.
Thank you, Georg. My study was about, I interviewed women that define themselves as well-being and well-functioning despite these very traumatic experiences. And it was kind of clear that this is an interactive process, and it relies on their own inner strengths and internal traits, but also in the interaction with the environment. And they describe many aspects that ease they and help them to overcome and experience positive emotions despite their traumatic experiences. So I mean, not everyone is able to, maybe not, and those that are meeting you, they might not, but it's not impossible. And they described both the importance of social relations. They described the importance of having opportunities to education, to individual housing, to move away from home as a young. So I think there are many ways to create a flute, a river that is full of resources. So even those with traumatic experiences can swim and can experience these positive emotions. In a short.
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot, Hilde. I think, I hope that answered this question to a certain extent. We cannot go much deeper into that now because we also have several interesting questions in the chat earlier. But certainly, I think Hilde would be a very interesting person to talk to more and look into her study. We have, for example, in the chat, this certainly important question. No, sorry, I still need to make one statement about coping and this definition of health as being the ability to adapt. We as cytogenesis people really hate this definition because it's still reactive. I mean, there's something out there and I need to adapt to that. It puts me in a completely passive mode. And also coping, I mean, there's something bad out there, I need to adapt and overcome that. Still, I can grow out of it. I fully agree. But there are many great positive things in life which are not really about coping and adapting, where I do have my own goals in life, where I define my own purpose, what I want to achieve, and work with full force towards that, and not just about adapting existing stuff and so on and coping with existing stuff. So I think this whole proactive proactive perspective, which is very well captured in the concept of both crafting and agency. There is a parallel workshop actually on agency, and you'll hear more about that during the plenary discussion. I think it's very powerful because it adds, I'm not saying coping is not important, it even cannot be positive. I mean, it's even green in my model because I think it's quite positive, but still there's more than adapting and coping with proactive shaping of the future. I hope you can understand my engagement for that. then we still have this question here, which I found quite interesting. One person said, let's see, I want to find the right wording. Salutogenesis, Gonda said, salutogenesis is not only associated with mental health, I thought, it's associated with general health, or am I wrong? Now, Greg, I mean, we talked a lot about now mental health, social, emotional aspects. All the models you showed really are only on that level. So where is physical health in that picture?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, we thought about developing a scale that captures both negative and positive health on all the biopsychosocial levels. And I mean, we're psychologists, that's why we work a lot with the mental health concept. But if you think about questionnaires like the functioning or ICF on physical health, it's like I can climb stairs without problems. I can do my housework without any problems, things like that. That's sort of the absence of any impediments. So if you want to ask what is positive physical health, you probably have to ask some fitness coach. That would be somebody who says, well, that's not just I can climb stairs without problems. I jump up the stairs. I take the stair flight with joy, something like that. Don't ask me. I'm not a physical guy. That will be sort of how you would have to think about this. What is in the physical health terms, what is more than just having no problems in doing what you have to do with your physical capacities? I don't know. Maybe somebody of you knows more about that. What would be sort of a more in terms of positive physical health?
Gonda?
May I react? Mm-hmm. Thank you for your a nice presentation. But I am the whole time in your presentation struggling with your definition of health. And Georg, you gave some explanation. You don't agree with the definition of health as to adapt, but for me, it's even not clear. How do you define health?
Well, I mean, I would say I don't agree with this definition of adapting in isolation. I think that's an important part of a good definition of health. I think really it goes beyond this adaptation. And for example, Craig showed this definition, at least of mental health, which is really moving beyond that adaptation and making clear that you also want to really be, for example, productive in your work, and you also want to contribute to society at large. And by that, you also want to find deeper meaning in your life. So I think there's not just one simple, easy definition of positive health, but clearly it's more than this just being able to adapt and cope. It's also about this more growth and development and thriving needs of us as humanity.
Yes, Gregor, your name is quite the same. Gregor and Gregor. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, but Gregor, you did some reference to the ICF. I am an expert in using ICF, and I am thinking functioning is the neutral concept, and you are thinking about growing physical health. But I think salutogenetic, I love it very much because it's so really nice concept to explain as exactly what is health. And now you are referring most of the time to positive health or to positive psychology or positive mental health. And I'm thinking the whole time, no, health is in essence and the most important concept we have to strive for. And it's not only to grow and to climb more stairs or to, no, it is life is just normal. we can't have 10 the whole day. Our life is normal. It's just a 7 or something. There's nothing wrong with a 7 because it's much energy taking to have the whole day at 10. My God, I want to climb the stairs. That's enough for today. Yeah. And sometimes, oh yes, I want to do it very quickly. So that's the most thing I'm so I'm looking for. But what exactly do you mean with the mental or only the positive health? I'm looking for the health. I think that's much important.
Shall I say something, Georg, or who wants to say something? No, I mean, this is the part where there's so much discussion. Should we expand health as a definition from the classical definitions? Or should we say, as some people say, let's talk about health and well-being, and well-being mm-hmm. isn't mm-hmm. health? Or shall we talk about disorders and well-being, or about disorders and thriving or flourishing? So that would be also something which is a discussion which is influenced by many social, cultural, economical, societal factors. I mean, as soon as we start defining thriving as health, the healthcare providing system will kick in, and maybe policy will kick in. They will say, okay, if this is sort of an official part of human health, then we have to make it accessible to the health providing systems. And many people say, no, we don't want that. We exactly as you say, it's okay when population is normal, and everything above that is sort of private stuff. We don't look at that. So it will come into the light of the public and the defining and categorizing systems of society, which will make it also liable, and that will have many consequences. And that's why people say, positive psychology, nice thing, but please keep it out of the official health definition. Thank you. So that would be one perspective. Maybe Elia?
I actually really liked what Hilda said yesterday in her presentation. Mm-hmm. This life is not just about living it, but actually the possibility to experience joy and pleasure. I don't think that we talk much about it, because really what makes our life meaningful is the fact that we can enjoy it. Sometimes people can be very sick, but still find a way to enjoy their life. And this is actually, I see, is maybe an answer also to Stefan, the connection to medicine, because with joy and pleasure, we have a whole set of hormones like oxytocin and parasympathetic activities that can bring health, versus what makes suffering, or when we are not able to feel joy, it will bring us more cortisol and more sympathetic activity and adrenaline that will actually, and I think this is very much connected to Stanley work in 1936 about stress, how people get better. It's by actually enjoying life. I don't know if it supports, but this is
absolutely my perspective. I think I agree with Greg in the sense that we must be very careful with defining positive health in a top-down official way, because then we would really start telling people how to live their life, because that positive health is really about how you define your own purpose of life, what you want to pursue, how you want to pursue it, what is most important to you as a person. And that certainly cannot be defined by experts at all. This is exactly what health promotion is about. I mean, we normally start where the people are. So we would, if we do it on a one-on-one basis, start what's important to this person. As you also, Gonda, said about the ICF, even within that system, you could do it in a very individualized way. But even more so when we talk about positive health. And there has been one author actually already in 1930, and he already said health is really about defining your own norms of health. So what is health to you as a person, and what do you want to achieve or do with your health as a person? That's health. Then you can define that. And not only have, I mean, the skills, abilities, but also the opportunities around it. And I think this is why it's so powerful, this proposal, which you will hear later. But agency, I think, is really a very promising concept to understand how we can give back the power to the people to define and develop positive health. And certainly, I think we should be careful that we do not put all burden on the individual for positive health. Although, as I said, now we should define it individually. I also would say we could also define it collectively. So we do that in organizations always. So we go in there, work with teams, working teams, and let them define what are really the goals they want to achieve and they want to improve the collaboration for work environment. How would they define a thriving team? What would be the indicators, collective indicators? And I think that's, again, possible. It should, also ethically responsible. Certainly should not be defined top down by management. You are a thriving team when you follow these indicators, when again, we are in this very prescriptive controlling mode. But really, if we do it in a bottom-up approach and they would collectively define what we want to achieve as a team, so we all can develop well within this team, I think then it's quite okay to define positive health from this very, very local specific context. Okay, sorry, a little bit to engage this morning. Any other questions? I mean, we now just started in an informal discussion, which we had prepared discussion questions, chat boards, but I think it's quite difficult for now. So you would like to continue like that, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like to comment a little bit on this related to my studies among these traumatized women. We are now soon publishing a second study where we just got into this, how they define well-being. We were talking about well-being in that one, because it became so interesting and so obvious that you cannot put on some kind of a measure what is well-being. We decided to leave it up to the women to define, those that were included, if they defined they were well, had well-being and well-functioning. And we found that it's very relative, and it's very much about the comparison to social norms, comparison to how did I feel before, and the comparisons to how is my neighbor doing, or my friends, and putting it in, finding their own ways, what is well-being mean to me. So it's important to get the voices of the individuals themselves.
Thanks for also this specific case where you also found this fruitful.
Yeah, I believe if I can jump in.
Sure.
That I agree with what you were saying, and I think there's a great emphasis that we have to make in emotion, body, that we are not just minds that go to meetings, but minds, bodies, feelings, all this goes together. It's not just one thing a part of the other. And what you were saying, Hilde, about comparisons, the acceptance of where we are now, and picking up what Georg was saying, is where we want to go. And the health that we have now, the well-being, that to have that image of ourselves and where we would like to be. And then it's defining objectives really clear to, if we talk about teams, we do the same. We create, what is your well-being now and where would you like to go? And we do it in a creative way. No, we do a collage about your well-being phrases and images, and that gives them a really insight of, oh, maybe I should take more care about my thoughts, or about my feelings, or about my body. How can I change it? What do I prefer, thinking or not thinking? What do I prefer feeling? Or what is uncomfortable about feeling? What don't I want to feel? What I would like to feel? And where do I want to go? And in that between, in that gap of the future and now, is like creating that bridge towards what objectives, what plan of action. For me, it's about action. What do I have to do? How do I do it? And not thinking about so much how, because then we get stuck in the how. How should I do, create strategy? It's about starting to move. And that is in many aspects with people that are with high levels of stress or low levels of depression. Yeah. So we can just start moving and get out of where we are. So we get into a better future, we would say, better or more comfortable, or the wanted future with a better health, a well-being. That is a great debate, as you were saying, Gregor, that we could be talking about, like, what is health? Well-being always. So thank you.
But interesting, Oliver. So would you say in this case also, you even are working with people who are already in the burnout or close to a burnout, and still you do not really focus on coping with burnout and how to overcome it, but immediately focus on what could you do differently in the thriving sense? That's interesting.
And one thing that Elia was saying about rescuing emotions, I think everybody has in the background happy moment. Everybody has in the background resources when at the moment of their life where they were secure, where they were trustful, where they were empowered. And we have to maybe sometimes go back there. I know it's easy and depends what cases are really extreme, but we can rescue that point to bring a bit of light to people, because they have been there, so they can go again there. I think that is very important to work in this sense.
Yeah, thanks a lot for also sharing this experience, Oliver. Craig, you had raised your hand. Craig Becker.
Yeah, I just had a question. When you guys talk about this, how do you explain the relationship between positive and, I put it in the chat too, positive and negative health, such that, I mean, does, or thriving and surviving, are they dependent, independent? How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, we try to make it clear, really, but I think they are closely interrelated. Probably that's also behind your question, Greg, but you also assume they cannot be completely independent. So certainly, once I'm severely diseased, this also really will somehow, to a certain extent, impair that I can develop feelings of flourishing and thriving. But still, it's I think Corey Keyes shows it quite nicely that it's a dual continuum of negative health and positive health. So even although you have, for example, an anxiety disorder, you can still thrive and flourish in your life. Also, in some cases, you are even limited by this anxiety disorder. Or think about the very extreme case of a person who cannot walk anymore, but he's still participating in Paralympics. So even if in physical health, he is compensating that limitation and develops a lot of strength in the upper arms. So certainly, I mean, these two aspects are always closely interrelated. And if I have a lot of resources available and build up this powerful resource gain cycle, as Gregor showed in the Broaden and Build theory, this certainly also will most likely help me to better deal with an existing disease. Absolutely. So I think they are closely related.
Well, that description was a little confusing because you made it both dependent and independent, such that they exist at the same time, but does having one, because I mean, the research is pretty clear that they're independent. Just because you raise one doesn't mean you lower the other, and that it's, so they're independent and that you, it's different set of factors can create thriving than what necessarily lead to just surviving.
It depends maybe on the research. So in our research, we can really show that with strong resources are both protecting negative health outcomes and mm-hmm. both promoting at the same time, even the same resources also promoting thriving. I mean, certainly there might be differences which resources are particularly powerful for the one or the other, but still where resources really have with both or with two important functions also empirically.
Yeah, I would agree on the positive side for sure. I don't see it so much in the negative side. Just because you eliminate the negative doesn't necessarily mean that you yields a thriving outcome.
No, but this is exactly what I said. I mean, to a certain extent, it will impede, if you have a disease, impede your thriving, but not fully. You can still, it's still independent. And again, Corey Keyes only found like 23% of shared variants. Okay. So any other questions or comments? Do we have anything in the chat, Greg?
Yeah, Robin Brown was saying, as a kinesiologist, yeah, I can contribute to physical movement, and absolutely agree with this. When we activate the body, it starts generating different hormones. I don't know if you want to jump into that, but absolutely agree. And that's one of the mechanisms to fight stress.
I mean, certainly all these three dimensions of health are closely intertwined, our physical, our psychological, emotional, and our social health. And that's a very important example. It goes either way. So if I'm more physically active, it's exactly helping to get my stress hormones down and to better recover. So making this negative health development less likely. On the other hand, we also know certainly that psychosocial factors are such strong predictors of negative health outcomes. So we know from stress research at work that people with high stress levels, chronic stress levels at work, are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop cardiovascular disease, musculoskeletal disorders, and also the most common mental disorders. So it's really powerful for all dimensions, what kind of balance between demands and resources I experience in life, in this case, in working life. Yeah, so certainly I agree very closely into mind. Any other questions or comments? So maybe you could share some thoughts. I mean, now, do you find this argument that we really should complement the original salutogenic model in this dual path model with this high interactive paths between the two main paths of health development? Do you find that fruitful and useful? Or do you think, well, we can do without it and just keep it separate, the original salutogenic model, and then we have positive psychology next to it, and then we also have pathogenesis, and let's keep it separate. I would like to get some comments on that. Do you find it's useful to have this kind of dual development model of health?
Maybe I may comment. For me, the salutogenetic concept is so valuable to change the whole care system, because it's more important to strive for health instead of not having a disease. So the ease, this ease continuum is very valuable. It was for me very helpful as an ICF expert to have a theory above the concrete classification of the international classification of functioning, disability, and health. And so that's the most valuable thing for me, the salutogenetic concept. But I struggle, as I said before, with the accent on the mental or the positive, because I think it's then you take one part, in my opinion. I hope that the salutogenetic concept will be the whole health and not only the positive part, because it's one part. We have also the negative health, and salutogenetic is the whole, and pathogenetic is only directed to the disease. And yes, of course, it's influences your health when you have a disease or when you have a physical disease. So I'm struggling with that. But for me, the concept is very helpful. But I'm struggling with how you are measuring salutogenetic. What are your measuring instruments? As a researcher, I'm looking for just Greg said, the dependent and the independent variables. And sometimes it's going on and on. Sometimes it seems that health in your definition is the same as enthusiastic or positive. And I think that's not it's the same thing as health.
Yeah, we would not say it's the same at all. I mean, we say just we would need to add that perspective. But as far as I understand your argument, you also would prefer such an integrated model where all the different health experiences of humans are well captured to make really purposeful decisions on which aspect I need to focus most at this very moment or in a specific context where I want to promote health, also on a collective level for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Good. I think, Elia, sorry, I will give the voice to someone else now because you already had several opportunities. So Shimon Waldvogel, he brought up a comment. Shimon, would you be willing to share it here in the plenary? Are you still here? Yeah, you're still here, Shimon.
Yeah, hi. First of all, it's great to be part of this conversation, even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning here in Philadelphia. Oh. And for me, it's actually an honor because Aaron Antonovsky was actually one of my mentors in medical school. And with that as a background, I think that needing to consider the community aspects and how the individual interacts with them are critical in terms of a sense of coherence. I mean, what we do in life is essentially make mental maps to help us negotiate life. And those mental maps are essentially created by our interaction with community. And without addressing the political, the social, and all these other elements, I think that by just focusing on positive psychology, I think we're going to really miss a huge opportunity to make salutogenesis much more relevant. I think that in today's world, where people are feeling so alienated, marginalized, and feeling not heard, you mentioned before agency, we should even consider the aspects of coherence in terms of national identity, both positive and negative. And I know that Antonovsky would have probably said that the fact that someone has coherence and is feeling that they are able to manage their life a little bit through that is not necessarily good for the overall. In the US, and I would assume in Europe, we're experiencing what's happening politically, where people who were alienated and marginalized now are becoming salutogenic in the sense that they feel part of something larger than themselves, giving them meaning. But I think the end result is going to be catastrophic. So I think salutogenesis needs to go beyond positive psychology. There's a lot of other people talking about positive psychology. I think combining the mass interest and intelligence in this group towards agency, towards how to think more broadly about the human being in context would be very helpful.
Thanks a lot, Simon. I think this is a very important and powerful statement you made. And I think actually the perfect transition to the reminder of this conference. Certainly, I mean, when we talk about health, first, health is always experienced by a person, by an individual, but it's created collectively and by society. So I fully agree that on the left-hand side of the model, we absolutely need to think about where do these demands and resources come from and how can we really influence that better balance on a collective level. And that's really very much a topic we will cover both on this sessions on salutogenic interventions, and if more so applying salutogenesis exactly also as you suggested, beyond health of an individual to collective health, even societal health, where we will also introduce this idea of a coherent society, which will exactly capture that. So thanks a lot for bringing that up. And I think that's really something we need to dig more into during this conference. Absolutely.
Just very shortly, like to say that we are systems theorists. We have a very systemic approach to what we do. And we talk a lot about mental models and how they are created in our case in working communities. And we want to bring this thinking of salutogenesis into the mental models of the groups we work with. In this working environment. And we always felt it's not enough just to focus on stress and burnout and exhaustion, but we have to get the thriving idea back into the working context. And that's why we sort of developed this model with the two axes and also the positive parts and the positive well-being in our work, and also use scales showing positive well-being and engagement in these communities. So it's also very much about building new mental models with this approach we here presented.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Right. And you can find more of that, for example, in our workshop on applying this to organizations. So we do that exactly on organizational level, but also our workshops on planetary health, for example. Okay. Good. So time is actually nearly over. So I would like to give the last question to Maria, which I think didn't say much before. So please, Maria.
Thank you, Georg. I just wanted to add, I think, bringing all the things together, my overall view is that it's very valuable to have this edit element in the model. Also what Gregor said, we have to bring it back in the discussion. I think my comment was is that at the same time, we have to be careful not to go overboard with it. Because I think very often, maybe HR departments and organizations are like, oh yeah, let's focus on positive health because it's easier, because then we don't have to ask ourselves the hard questions. And then they have all these programs and people start asking, can we please ask about the stressors? Can we please have a discussion on what is really happening, not just about wellness? And I think that's a danger we have to be aware of to keep it in context and talk about both things.
Thanks a lot, Maria. I think this was actually a perfect last statement. That's exactly, I think, what our mission is about. But we do have this full human health experience. And if we only focus on the one side, the negative side, like people do in organizations with psychosocial risk assessment, which implies your work is a risk to you. I mean, how ridiculous is that? And then for others are only talking about organizational energy. Let's all thrive. That's also ridiculous. Are we only thriving and full of energy? So it's both. And really, that's, I think, the core mission I have, to bring exactly this dual perspective back into salutogenesis, because that resonates so well to everyone's life. Also, as I showed in the beginning, with this distribution curve of people, they always experience being partly in this dangerous world life and being partly in this thriving work life. They are both at the same time in different extents, but both is valid and important. And we need to capture both in order to link to our to the real everyday life experience of our constituencies we would like to work with. Well, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure discussing with you. I really loved this lively discussion. I also would like to thank certainly Craig for this great co-chairing of this workshop and his great ideas. And yeah, more to come in the plenary and certainly throughout the conference. See you. Bye. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you from my side too. Slides, PDF are in the chat if somebody hasn't seen it, so you just can pull them down.
Thank you.
Okay, see you everybody later.